Democrats are still trying to figure out how to win back white working-class voters after last month's loss to Donald Trump. And at least one member of President Obama's cabinet has a few ideas. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack is the former governor of Iowa, and long before the election, he'd been warning his fellow Democrats that the party needed to reach out to rural America. I spoke with Secretary Vilsack yesterday, and I asked him if he saw the Trump victory coming.
I wouldn't say that I saw it coming, but I had some concerns about how accurate the polls were based on my travels throughout rural America for the last several years. And it's not just this campaign. I think this has been a situation that has been developing over a period of many years, and I think it finally came to a head in this election.
Yeah, and it wasn't until after the election that it seemed that Democrats collectively started scratching their heads, wondering what went wrong. But here is President Obama a couple of days after November 8th, where he suggested the Democrats lost in part because they didn't run an effective ground game. And he used your home state of Iowa as his example.
I won Iowa not because the demographics dictated that I would win Iowa. It was because I spent 87 days going to every small town and fair and fish fry and DFW hall. And there were some counties where I might have lost, but maybe I lost by 20 points instead of 50 points.
You know, you're friends of the Clintons. You were in the running as a possible VP pick. At any point, did you advise Hillary Clinton that she might want to take a page from the president's playbook here?
Well, clearly, during the course of the primary, that was a message that we conveyed, I conveyed to the Clinton campaign. But honestly, this extends beyond. The president's right. He did, in fact, go to Iowa. He did, in fact, spend a lot of time in those small towns. And I think that made a big difference. There was one difference, though. When the president ran for the first time in 2008, mm-hmm. we had a Democratic governor, a Democratic legislature, and a Democratic voting registration edge. All of that has dissipated over the period of the last 6 or 7, 8 years. So now we had a Republican governor, a Republican House, and all of the Republicans in Iowa leadership, in leadership positions, were forcefully behind Donald Trump. Having said that, I think if you look at state legislative races, you look at congressional races, you look at Senate races, and now you look at the presidential race, the Democratic Party needs to spend some time, some resource, and some effort in rural areas, because the president is absolutely correct. You cannot afford to lose those places 90-10, 80-20, 75-25, which is has happened in far too many elections in the last couple of cycles.
So what happened? I mean, why did Democrats feel that they could afford to turn their backs on those voters?
Well, I think that there's an understandable desire to focus on the future and to focus on increasing and expanding populations in the country, and that's all well and good. I think the reality is you have to do both. I think you have to have a strategy that essentially speaks to the entirety of America, because we have a message that I believe will sell, and we have taken steps to provide help and assistance. We just haven't marketed as aggressively and as well as I think we should have.
And how do you suggest the Democrats do that? Because just last week, Nancy Pelosi was reelected as House Minority Leader. Of course, she's from California. Chuck Schumer from New York leads the Democrats in the Senate. And from that vantage point, I wonder if you think the party can convincingly sell its message.
Well, Senator Schumer is a very good example of someone who pays attention to rural areas in his work as a U.S. senator from the state of New York. I can't tell you how many phone calls I've fielded from Senator Schumer based on issues involving dairy operations and based on upstate New York. Hmm. He pays attention, and the result is he wins 60-40, 65-35 in his reelect effort. And there are examples all across the board of Democrats who have done that. Michael Bennett, another individual who spends some time and pays attention to rural areas. Al Franken, another example in Minnesota. If you spend some time, if you educate, you can win, and you can begin the process of building back state legislative bodies, which I think are critically important. I mean, the Republicans have done a very good job of systematically picking off state legislative chambers to the point where they now can control reapportionment. They also create a bench for congressional candidates, for gubernatorial candidates, and Senate candidates.
I'm speaking with Tom Vilsack. He's the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture. And let's shift gears just a little bit here. U.S. farmers exported $40 billion worth of food and agricultural goods to China and Mexico last year. Of course, those are two countries that have been clearly in the crosshairs of Donald Trump. What do you think the Trump administration would mean for the American agriculture industry if he gets into a trade war with China, if he drops out or renegotiates NAFTA, as he's promised to do?
Well, I think that I recently had a meeting with a number of ag commissioners and secretaries from states, mostly conservative states, and I pointed out that just that fact. Essentially, if you have and engage in a trade war involving China and Mexico, it will have adverse impacts on American agriculture. 30% of all farm sales are trade-related. 20% of all farm income is directly related to trade, and our number one and number three customers are China and Mexico. So in order for agriculture to continue to prosper, there has to be a much more nuanced conversation about trade and a much more nuanced conversation about China and Mexico than Mr. Trump has had up to this point.
Yeah, well, what's the nuance? Because trade, obviously, a huge motivating factor that got voters to the polls to support Donald Trump. I mean, were they just plain wrong about, you know, his stance on trade? Is that what you're saying?
An understanding to note the difference between globalization and concerns that you may have about its impact, technology and its and automation and its impact on employment versus trade that can, in fact, create jobs. Every $1 billion of ag sales generates and supports about 6,500 jobs at home. Hmm. Farmers understand the benefit of trade because they see it in the bottom line, in their income. There's a tremendous number of Americans that are employed as a result of trade who have not lost their jobs because of trade. They may have lost their jobs because of mechanization. They may have lost their jobs because of globalization and plants moving from one country to another, but that's not trade. And the nuance is being able to distinguish between globalization, mechanization, and trade. They are three separate and different components, and I think we have to do a better job of explaining the difference.
So again, Democrats perhaps missing the opportunity to message that. But, you know, Trump did promise to limit regulations, not only for farmers but for businesses. He promised to limit the EPA's reach into farming. He was in favor of corn ethanol subsidies, for limiting the tax rate on farms. You know, you might say his infrastructure plan could be a boon to rural voters. I mean, aren't these the types of populist messages that really might help the people who supported him?
Well, there's no question that regulations was an important area. But I think we need to put it in the context. If we had done a better job of explaining what his rhetoric might mean relative to agricultural trade, if we could have explained better the fact that an immigration reform bill really is about making sure we have adequate workforce on the farm and in processing facilities that will allow us to continue to be a food secure nation, we might have been able to balance off the I'm going to get rid of regulations message. Democrats, I think we need to be much more consistent and much more forceful in terms of explaining the benefits that the partnership between people and government has had and will continue to have.
You've got something like, I'm trying to do the math here, what, 40, 45 days left in office? I'm wondering if you're in just cleaning out the desk mode at this point, or is there something that you still feel like you can accomplish before January 20th?
Well, just today we were continuing to try to impress upon Congress the necessity of passing funding for opioids under the American Cures Act. We're also talking to folks in Congress about the necessity of fixing the fire budget. We have a horrific situation with our National Forest Service.
Fighting wildfires, you mean?
Fighting wildfires and being able to see more and more of that budget being eroded by fire suppression instead of maintenance. So we're continuing to work, and we'll continue to work right up until the very end.
Well, then January 20th, of course, President-elect Donald Trump becomes President Trump. We're all watching as his cabinet takes shape. As far as the Agriculture Department goes, some names have been floated around: Sam Brownback, Kansas governor, Sid Miller, a controversial commissioner of agriculture in Texas. But I want to know, from someone who's been at this job for 8 years, the entire tenure of President Obama, what do you believe will be the biggest flashpoint in your agency for the next ag secretary?
Well, I think they're obviously confront the fact that our commodity prices are not as strong as anybody would like them to be today because there's a substantial amount of surplus in world commodities and global markets. There's going to be a farm bill that will have to be reauthorized, and that's a tremendous opportunity for an administration to focus not just on the farm safety net, but on jobs, on infrastructure, on forestry, on conservation, research, and so forth. It'll be interesting to see how easy or how difficult the development of a new food, farm, and jobs bill will be.
U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, thank you very much.
Thank you.